satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us this evening, this lovely, cold, wintry, snowy evening on Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday and it is the 14th of December in the year 2004. And we had sunshine today. You know, there's really nothing like the sun in the winter. And when you think about it, it's just really perfect where we are. Because in the summertime, the sun is very high overhead, and it doesn't shine into the house and heat up the house. And then in the wintertime, it gets real low in the sky, and when that sun comes in the morning, it just lights up the whole house, and it is beautiful. As long as you don't have dust bunnies flying around, then it isn't too beautiful. We have a guest with us this evening. I'm going to first share our spiritual message. And then we're going to bring our guest up. This is from Matthew 18. And this is at, we're going to start at the beginning here. It says, at the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him, and set him in the midst of them. And he said, quote, verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever, therefore, shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name, receives me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. And that is tonight. I told you that I have a little neighbor girl, 10 years old, that stays with me on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings. And it is such a joy. And this tonight was for all of us and for all the precious little children in this world. And our guest this evening is Alan Watt. And Alan, thank you for being with us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. you know what? You always say the same thing.
I do.
I go, and I thought about this. I sound like a record. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us this evening. And then I go, it, you know, it's a pleasure. You know, thanks for being here. Yep, it's a pleasure.
That's it. I can always say greetings from the frozen north.
Greetings. Oh, there we go. That's what you should be saying.
Yeah.
So thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
And when I called you this evening, you and I decided, you know, that yes, you would like to come on with us as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have anything particular in mind, Alan, except that I know how much our listeners appreciate the information that you impart, and I just wanted to have you with us. But there was one thing that I would like to do, and then we'll take it anywhere you want. Last Monday, when we had that ridiculous chain of events, and you and I did a broadcast for 30 minutes without
being on
the air.
Yeah.
Well, I had a letter from a listener that was asking about David Icke.
Mm-hmm.
And he said evidently these were questions he asked you, and that you had said David Icke is a Freemason.
Mm-hmm.
And his question was, well, so what?
Yeah.
If he's a high Freemason, are you saying that his information is wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And he thought maybe that I would like to pose that question to you, and maybe you could respond to it.
Yeah. Well, Freemasonry at the top is run by the elite. And no one gets to be a high Freemason. And by high, I don't mean 33 degrees. I mean high.
Yeah.
You pay your way up to the 32nd degree. You know, they just simply pay it degree by degree.
Yeah, you pay your way up to 32nd?
Yeah,
I read about that. And then after that...
And high-degree Masons, of course, are into a different class altogether.
Uh-huh, and how do you get to...
It's more of a... they have their noble orders. And so you have Knights Templars and many different types. Knights of the Garter, you know.
How does...
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. And what I wanted to know is... can't you hear me, Alan?
I'll keep talking just in case we're still...
Hello, I can hear you fine. Oh, my goodness, I wonder what...
Therefore, high Masons have sworn allegiance to a program, which is the Great Work. So you couldn't be going out to expose the Great Work and work for them at the same time.
Uh-huh. Can you hear me, Alan?
Hello?
Yes. Oh, doggone it. Alan cannot hear me, folks. I don't know what's going on. And Eleanor, if you're listening, would you call in right now, please, and let me know if you can hear both Alan and I. I think what we're going to have to do is hang up and reconnect.
Oh, we're all, okay.
Alan, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to you the whole time.
I was talking to I don't know who. It was the sound of silence, I think.
I know, you kept saying hello, hello. One of my questions that I asked you, given that, and I had read this in a book on Freemasonry, that they pay their way up to the 32nd.
Yeah.
However, once they get there, how do they become higher than a 32nd?
Well, number one, you can't go higher unless you've been picked to go higher.
I know it, but how are they...
In other words, any Mason can basically pay their way up there, but once you've reached that stage, then if you have further use, generally in a public opinion-making capacity, you'll be pulled out to go higher. So even people who run local newspapers, that kind of thing, will be approached to go higher.
I see.
Because they create or help control, if you like, for public opinion.
Do the 32nd degree, are they aware that they cannot pay their way any higher and that they can go no higher unless that they're invited?
Yeah, they know that the 33rd degree is meritorious. So it's an award.
We have a phone call. Just one sec here, Alan. Hello?
Jackie, I can hear you both on shortwave.
Yes, Eleanor, thanks. You know, we've got, I think, a couple minutes delay.
Yeah.
And Alan could not hear me.
No, I heard him not hear you, but I'm saying at no time did either of you disappear from the shortwave.
Okay, well, he can hear me now, and thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Bye. I asked Eleanor to call in, Alan. When you couldn't hear me, I said, Eleanor, if you're listening, please call and let me know if you can hear both of us.
Uh-huh.
Because...
Every American president is awarded a 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry as soon as they become president.
Uh-huh.
It's every president is automatically a 33rd degree member.
So getting back to David Icke, did you say he's 33rd or higher?
I don't know. All I know is that a person I know who definitely is a pretty high Mason did go to one of his talks and shook his hand, spoke to him, gave him all the gestures and signs, and Icke replied in kind.
You what?
Icke replied in kind.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing that.
He replied in the same way, the same manner.
Oh.
So,
in other words, he flashed signs that David Icke and David Icke responded. However, don't 32nd degrees know the responses too?
Well, once they get to know each other, they go through a whole formula if they have the time. But basically, all we need to know is that you're a master mason, basically.
It was the master.
Oh, yeah.
What is the master?
It's only a third degree.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So we don't know that David Icke is a high degree mason.
No, although for the doors that got opened for him when he first came out, I mean, don't forget that if you look at the index of any of David Icke's books, sometimes there's a couple of hundred books listed there that he's supposed to have read. Now, the general public have never heard of those authors.
Uh-huh.
But David Icke came out of nowhere, was on the BBC, was on major television stations worldwide.
He was a sportscaster on BBC.
That's what he claimed.
Well, first he was a professional soccer player.
Yeah.
And said that his bio says this, mm-hmm. that then he got rheumatoid arthritis, and he became a BBC broadcaster, which
yeah.
I thought was quite impressive after, you know, what you had already shared with us
mm-hmm.
about how to spot individuals who are out there, really out there,
mm-hmm.
most probably being promoted and
yeah.
funded.
Yeah.
And so when I got the bio, because he was on the air with us, when I got, and folks, this is not a session to rap against David Icke. It was a sincere question that a listener asked,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it was worthy of bringing up, especially since he had discussed this with Alan. But, you know, the thing that amazed me, and you had told us this long before, mm-hmm. that when an author can spin out books that are hundreds of pages long,
And read all those books in the index.
Right. Now, see, that I hadn't even thought of, but when I saw the number of books
mm-hmm.
that he had printed or allegedly written, you know, in just a few years, it reminded me of what you said.
Yeah, plus he was touring 7 days a week all over the world.
Yeah, yes, mm-hmm. all over the world he was
yeah.
touring.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, because in one of the things, I saw him first on a video, And he was speaking to a huge audience in England, I believe, or someplace. But I'm telling you, it was a huge audience. And somebody had mailed me the video, and I listened to him just enwrapped. And I thought, oh, my God, this guy is wonderful. But I wondered, where the heck did he come from? I mean, who is this guy that's in front of this audience with it look like maybe 1,000 people or at least close to it.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, then the question that the listener or that our listener had is, is his information erroneous?
No, most of the information, most of it, is simply borrowed from all the people who've done the real work that the public have never heard of and most of them never will. But then David Icke then spins in to every second line the serpent people thing,
mm-hmm.
and of course if you were to relate the information from the real authors and mention some of the real authors to people, and they've looked through Icke's book because he's been promoted and it's been on the regular bookshelves, even, you know, bookstores,
mm-hmm.
Then they would simply laugh and say, Des Griffin or this guy or that guy, I guess they believe in serpent people too. So they're discredited, you see. And that's the technique of how to discredit the real authors that he's borrowed from.
Oh.
You understand? See,
okay.
In other words, someone reading through it and being half skeptical, would look at all those authors and say, no, I won't bother because they're probably all the same.
Well, Alan.
Yeah.
It seems that research that people have done, and not just David Icke or Icke, but credible people, that ancient writings refer to a serpent-like people, their, you know, their gods or whatever. How do you account for that?
Well, all we have is the writings, and there's no doubt that the high priesthood and the pharaohs wore the aureus round their head, which was the symbol of the serpent, and that's what they called serpent people in those days. Was the nobility. They wore a symbol of the serpent.
They called the nobility serpent people?
Yeah, anyone who wore the aureus, you see. I mean, it was part of the initiation ceremony of the high degrees was to have the aureus placed on your head. And so sure. And it's in, and of course, that's why it's in Moses with his brazen serpent and so on. The serpent is a symbol of their religion, which is eternal. It's a symbol of their what they believe is their reincarnation of their own spirits in this eternal circle, coming back into their own offspring or you know and descendants. So the serpent, and plus the serpent, because it sheds its skin every year, gives the impression of immortality. So. That's why the serpent was chosen.
So do you think, and I'm asking your opinion, that because when the books contain so much truth...
That he's borrowed from everybody else.
Okay, yeah. Do you believe that that is what his function is to get people to... Because I will tell you, there have been times when I thought, well... I find out that the truth is always stranger than fiction, and how would we know that there weren't serpent-like beings?
Well, when you start seeing them, then it's time to have a good look at yourself. You see, all religions start with someone saying, this happened to me, believe it. And so you have a belief system. And so the followers don't have the experience, but they want to believe.
So they write about it and write about it as though that it is fact.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, that there is no credibility to that?
Well, to say, I mean, when you start seeing them yourself.
All right.
Or you know anyone who does. You know.
What about shapeshifters?
Shapeshifting is a different. You can, and a lot of the people at the, near the top are trained to, like shamans. They can pretty well project into your mind anything they want you to see. And so that's where the shape-shifting comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And actually, most people could do it if they were trained in it.
I'm reading a book. I think I told you about it. It's interesting, and so much of what you have told us is in this book, and yet there are things that you just kind of know it's sort of like a hook or something, but it said that the priesthood back in those days, even in Egypt and back in then, that they had the ability to put, literally transmit thoughts into people's minds, even back then, Alan.
Yeah.
He called them black mentalists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that certainly is something that's never ceased, really. And we know today we can do it with technology. It's even been on regular television. With Nick Begich, you know Nick Begich from Alaska?
Oh, yeah, Dr. Begich,
Well, he was on a show, the Wendy Mesler show, a few years ago, and he showed her a table, a long, maybe 15-foot-long table, with different gadgets on it. Most of them were about the size of a pack of cigarettes or else a TV remote. And he told her to stand 20 feet away. He pointed one at her, and he said, "What do you hear?" She said, "I can hear music in the center of my head."
Oh, my goodness.
He said, "I could just as easily have programmed words across to you, and you'd hear a voice talking to you." And he said, "This stuff was used by the CIA in the 1950s. It's all obsolete." And this was on CBC TV.
Wow.
that's a Canadian broadcasting.
Why do you think they allow that kind of stuff to be shown?
Because they're so far ahead now today that, and I think it's also the mocking of the victim. They know that the Joe Average either won't remember it or it went any one of you know the other.
Or even if they do remember it, they'll go, oh my God, but what? There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, it leaves a person probably feeling pretty helpless and pretty hopeless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would think that that would be part of why they do it, would you?
It probably is. Psychological warfare works on disarming the minds of an enemy or a potential enemy before any physical threat occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have certain people who, again, are shot up into superstar status on the shortwave radio. If you listen to some of them, one in particular, you'd be under your kitchen table quivering after 15 minutes because he hits you like a machine gun with everything that's been done to you, is being done, and will be done to you. And he never gives an answer to any of it as to how to combat it, you see. So that psychological warfare is a tremendous tool that's always been used.
And the fear.
Oh, fear, absolutely.
This book I'm reading also mentioned that the priesthood, it talked a lot about the priesthood, Alan, that fear was their greatest tool.
Yes. Well, that's the first thing they knew thousands of years ago, is the effect that abuse could have on children. And then they studied them as they turned into adults. And of course, there's nothing they did not know about sexual abuse and mind control through these techniques. This is ancient stuff, ancient stuff. And getting back to the black priests of the ancient times, since they have found batteries that bug them up in Egypt, and even Turkey's got some, I believe, which are definitely thousands of years old, who's to say that the technology didn't exist back then to do the same thing of projection?
Yeah, well, you know, you've said before, I remember you talking about the pyramid, the Giza, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And that you said that when that thing was first there, that the entire pyramid was overlaid, and that all of the knowledge and technology that existed was there, right there on that pyramid.
Yeah, it was all encoded, written on a limestone surface that was supposed to have been destroyed around the 8th century when a bunch of Arabs came in to raid the place.
If it was a bunch of Arabs.
Yeah, I can't see it, to be honest, because I don't see why they'd have... The story goes that they literally, it's a lot of work to peel all of the limestone off.
Yeah, and how would they get up way up there to the top? How big is that thing?
Oh, it's a few hundred feet.
Yeah, right.
But the fact is, obviously a big team went in here of demolition experts, and the story goes that they were looking for the entrance. That's supposedly why they took the entire coating off it.
I see.
Now they have found lots of the coating in shreds and shards underneath the sand at the base, so it definitely was covered with limestone at one time.
And that the technology, you said that everything, well, that they have probably gone beyond now where they've ever gone beyond, but up until not too long ago, all of the technology that had been introduced, and all of these so-called, the people who have been credited with discovering, like, the law of gravity and all of this, that it was given to them because it was already known.
It was already known. If you go into, if you leave the it's the fifth grade history books and go further, and look at the other real history books about Isaac Newton, and these guys, they all joined, and Roger Bacon, they all joined the Royal Institute, which was a Masonic, a Rosicrucian institution, the first one chartered by the Crown, given a legal charter to operate. And every member had to leave his wife, if he had one, and family behind, become celibate, and go from there. And there were pretty well nobodies until they joined the Institute. Newton himself, as well documented, lived in Cambridge University most of his life. He was a homosexual, and that's why he preferred to live there. And again, even most of the writings he left, and there was piles and piles of writing, were all to do with the deciphering of the Kabbalah, you know. And so what he did get for all his work on the Kabbalah for the Institute was to be made head of the Royal Mint of Britain. And so they'll get the rewards generally in a financial way or some way. If they do their duty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, most of his work was to do with the Kabbalah, and you'll find the same with most of them. Francis Bacon again did put his family away to join it, and I think his wife ended up in an insane asylum because of it.
Francis Bacon.
Yeah. And so.
Well, he wasn't a homosexual.
Well, it makes you wonder because. At that time, it was an all-male fraternity, and they did have to be celibate or at least leave their wives behind to get taught the higher mysteries because it was a Rosicrucian thing.
So, in other words, they were allowed to marry to procreate,
mm-hmm.
but then after that job was done, they had to forsake their mates.
That's right, or else leave the academy while they were married and procreate, and then... Again, leave so much money for their family, leave them behind, cut them off, and then go back. Yeah. But they couldn't do both at the same time.
I don't know if this is even appropriate to discuss on the air, and you can just say what you think, but in a conversation that we had, you said that the reason, because you had told us, and it seems that it is bearing out to be true, that the elite of the males are homosexuals.
Yeah.
And but you had said that the families of these those born into the elite families actually induct them into homosexuality.
Yeah, I mean
and that even their nannies or their you know, people, their caregivers, sexually abuse them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, they stimulate them at a very early age. Yeah.
And then they go, they're sent off to the boys' schools?
Boarding school, yeah.
Yeah, and you had mentioned how that the masters at the boarding schools were homosexuals.
Yeah, they'd been through the same system.
And,
I mean, it used to be in Britain that every week there was another case of sexual abuse inside these boarding schools. Which they always, of course, try to really cover up, and for the ones that were released to the public, I wonder how many were covered up, you know, in very wealthy schools.
Weren't there rumors about not Charlie? What was his brother's name? Prince.
It was Andrew. Wasn't
Andrew.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they used to call him Randy Andy.
Randy Andy.
And he used to go to all these parties dressed as a female. And that used to be in the British papers, you know.
And it's certainly being promoted amongst the young people today, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, the elite. If you go through the histories of the elite, they've never had a problem. With homosexuality, and it would almost seem as though that was the norm for them, that their wives were simply to procreate with, and their wives knew that once they'd born the children, they could also take on the visitors.
We have music playing behind us now.
Yeah.
Folks, we're going to be back after this 60-second break with Alan Watts, so please stay with us. We'll be right back, Alan. I'll be away from the mic for a minute.
Okay.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
We're back. Alan?
Yep.
Oh, gosh, did we have very much...
No, a few things.
Oh, good, okay. I wanted to remind our listeners, before we get back into our conversation, folks, I want to remind you that Sweet Liberty, and as you heard on our break, is brought to you by you. And in case you didn't get the address, I would like to give it to you once again, if you would like to see the broadcast continue. You can send your sponsorship donations to me, Jackie Petrou, and that is at P.O. Box 190-190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. And we are broadcasting only three nights a week now, live, Monday through Wednesday, and our guest host, I wanted to remind you, on Thursday nights is Jeffrey Bennett. And last week, Jeff started the first of a four-part series on the money system. I found it very intriguing. He's entertaining while he's presenting his information because he can do voices and dialogue and et cetera, but he was actually reading from congressional records on how the system got set up here in America by the U.S. government incorporated. So be sure that even though we're only live three nights a week, Jeffrey Bennett is live on Thursday night as guest host on Sweet Liberty. So be sure to tune in. And I think that's my main thing I wanted to mention, Alan. Seemed like there was something else, and now I can't remember it. I had this written down.
Yeah.
Not meaning to switch on us in midstream, mm-hmm. but in our conversation that we had last weekend, you had told me some very intriguing information. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the controlled opposition.
Yeah.
And the different people who are involved, you know, from way up at the elite to the level of, quote, patriot broadcasting. But you mentioned Phyllis Schlafly. Well, we got to, I don't know how her name came up. I mean, she's one of the big ones, folks. Eagle Forum came out in, I think it was 72. And Phyllis Schlafly, according to Betty Mills, and also Charlotte Iserbeet, who was very much enamored for a long time with Phyllis Schlafly, and finally, after years of not speaking to Betty Mills, who was trying and trying to sound the warning, she admitted publicly, Charlotte did, that Betty Mills was right all along. Betty said that she even had... government funding from the Justice Department for some project, Alan. And, you know, there isn't any so-called patriot or conservative Christian who's going to get funding from the Justice Department if they're not doing something the government wants them to do.
That's right.
And Charlotte said that she actually had the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But you had seen on television there. Would you tell our listeners what you told me?
Well, actually, it was Worldwide Catholic Radio.
Worldwide Catholic Radio. She's a dame of she is the dame of Malta, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's EWEN or something that their station is, you know, from the States. And it was a Sunday, and it was a boring day, and I was flipping through, and I came across the Catholic station. And what they had on was, I don't know if it was a bishop, he was up there anyway, who had started up a Catholic investment group as a corporation to supposedly attract large investors who are Catholic, who would invest in other corporations only if they followed the Catholic doctrine. This was his spiel anyway. Now eventually they became very, very powerful, and they had a lot of pull because they could either, you know, help float a company or sink them by withdrawing money. And as this head of it, of the group, was explaining all the wonderful things that they'd done, and mentioning the board members of the group, and Phyllis Schlafly was one of them. She was on the board. He was praising all the names. They're obviously well known amongst the Catholic community. And then it turns out that he says, we only pooled our funding from one drug company. He says, we don't invest in drug companies that have anything to do with contraception. He said, so we pooled, but we did run a company. We owned one of the main drug companies, and pretty well by shares only, 80% or something. But the other 20% decided they wanted to go ahead with a contraceptive. And so this Catholic investment group eventually pooled their money. But they'd run this drug company for quite a few years, and it was the same drug company that makes the Ritalin for all the children.
The
children are taken.
Yes.
And I thought, so okay, Slatley's okay, quite happy with drugging the children, but she doesn't like the fact that they ended up eventually turning out a contraceptive pill.
Yeah, well, you know, we had a Reverend Miles, oh my goodness, his name is escaping, Austin Miles, minister from California.
Yeah.
And Austin had told us that he had been invited to join the Council for National Policy, and he felt very proud, you know, because there are all these very famous Christian conservative leaders were all members of this group. And he said it didn't take but two times attending their meetings that he realized, and he said he told his wife, he said, these people purport to be opposing the New World Order, but he said, I think we're going to see some of them sitting right up on the board of directors of the New World Order.
Yeah.
And I asked him what he knew about Phyllis Schlafly. He said, I don't really know much about her, but I know that she is not sincere, because he said at one meeting she made a statement, and she said that the right to life is the only hook that we have to hang our hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And she did literally call it a hook. Because, you know, the members of the Council for National Policy, with, you know, names like Marlon Maddox and D.J. Kennedy and Phyllis Schlafly, Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America,
yep.
There's so many of them. And each one of them, I realize this, has a button for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're very avid for gun rights, many people join Gun Owners of America. If it's right to life, it's Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum and some of these so-called Christian ministers, and they're all part of the program. And Betty Mills had said this.
Yeah.
You know, people blame what has happened to America on the left, on the Democrats and the liberals, but she said it's these so-called, she called them the phony conservative, Christian conservative crowd that has held the door wide open for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, see, it doesn't matter what your tunnel is. We've all been brought into tunnels when we're born here, meaning religions and so on and variations of whatever your tunnel is determines what your values will be. And they give you a leader for every tunnel.
Yes.
You know. So if you're out there and you haven't found one yet, don't worry. There will be one for you.
There will be somebody. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's how you vote. That guy speaks for me, you know. And that's how people get voted in. And they never learn, of course, that once you give your power to anybody, you shouldn't scratch your head when they then start to abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it always goes. But, no, there's always a leader for different types, yeah.
Yeah, button for every, or whatever our hot button is, there's somebody to push it.
Yeah, they always give you a hero. I mean, Albert Pike himself said, whenever the need arises amongst the public for a hero, we shall supply them.
Yeah.
And they do. They supply every side.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
I can relate to that because when I very first began to awaken and I became aware of Bogreitz, I saw a video that somebody handed me, and I called up his Center for Action in Nevada. That would have been in 91, the end of 91, and to find out if they had a Center for Action in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And if not, I wanted to start one, Alan.
Yeah.
And I thought Bogreitz was wonderful, and I wondered how in the world can this man still be alive telling all the stuff he's telling. And then they said, well, he isn't starting any new ones because he's going to be running for president. I said, oh, I want to help. And I'm telling you, for 9 grueling months, I what I realized when I finally got out of it, and I had to, because I realized, you know, what a total fraud that he was and how people were being taken and how the campaign itself had been sabotaged right up from that level. But what I realized is that he was a hero to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found out that another person who worked closely with him was allegedly fired, and we found out later that that was just so those of us who were dropping out could be gathered back up again.
Yeah.
And then we found out that he was a fraud, and I felt so disillusioned and so betrayed, and I was naive, Alan. Mm-hmm. I believed people. Mm-hmm. I trusted, and I believed if they said it that it was so. Mm-hmm. And what occurred to me, I was getting into bed one night, and I thought, oh, my God, who can we trust out there? And then I thought, to hell with them all, I'll just put my trust in God. Mm-hmm. And the thought went through my mind, that's where your trust belongs, Jackie. Mm-hmm. But what occurred to me was that I was holding him up like a hero, and that there are no heroes. And if there are heroes, it's each and every single one of us mm-hmm. who do our little part in whatever we can do, Alan.
Yeah, if you're a follower, you're doomed.
Yep.
That's always been the way. You are your own champion.
Mm-hmm.
And you must champion yourself. And if you have to seek the truth, then, you know, you have to find the truth. You aren't going to find somebody
who's going to give it to you.
Yeah, either that or you end up deifying the person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's like David Icke, people deify him almost. They're hero worshippers. They worship the hero.
Yeah, well, if I hadn't have known you, and you hadn't clued us in beforehand on so many things, mm-hmm. and folks, I'm going back to December. Alan came with us the very first time at the beginning of December in 1998, and we wound up doing 5 full weeks because the listeners just kept calling and saying, bring him back. And I kept saying, and I know you remember this, Alan, I kept saying, like a qualifying disclaimer, so to speak, just because Alan Watt is saying this doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's true because I haven't done the research.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started, our listeners, God love them, began doing their own research, and I started getting information pouring into me. Look at this, look at this. This is exactly what Alan said. And more and more and more through these past years, so often, I've mentioned your name so many times on the air, Alan said, Alan Watt had said. And we, you know, you must know how much you are appreciated for the time that you've given. The way it felt to me is that you brought us out of the dark ages, Alan. In our awareness, I mean, some of the things that you told us were so wild and so out there that your head would be swimming. And then you'd find out that it's, at least there was information to confirm it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you leave things to guesswork, or again, a belief system, then you'll follow. If you believe something, you must know something, and that's the difference.
Yeah.
You must truly know something, not because someone else believes it, but because you know it. Yeah.
It goes out of the realm of belief into the realm of knowing.
Knowing, absolutely.
And there is a big difference there.
Yeah, you'll find, you'd be surprised too how many people have used a lot of the material that we discussed.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of people used that material.
That's interesting.
And some of those authors, in fact. And even the stuff to do with Orion at Christmas time.
You know what? I was thinking that we should do a broadcast next week so that you could share with our listeners what you... That was that Christmas.
That was right. Yeah.
That you came up with that, and we won't talk about it, but maybe Wednesday night you'll come on with us and share this with our listeners. I know what I wanted to say. Remember I said there was something else, but I forgot?
Yeah.
Well, Darren, our webmaster, is going to be our guest tomorrow night, and I wanted our listeners to know this because, folks, Darren and I had got into a discussion, and we got talking about the Blue Beam Project, Alan.
Yeah.
Darren has done a lot further research on this, just, you know, beyond, Serge Monast. And I said, I asked him to come on tomorrow night to share with us some of the research that he's done. And one of the things that he did bring out in our conversation, in his passionate way, he said, think about it, Jackie. You know, it was Kissinger, I think, who said that if there was ever a threat from an outside source, that all the people of the world would join together.
Yeah.
He said with the holograms, they could put huge spaceships in the sky, and people would believe we're being attacked by outer space. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I think it's extremely relevant. And basically, where our conversation led us.
Actually, the first person to say that was John Dewey.
John Dewey, you mean the education guy?
Yeah.
Said what?
The same thing. But if only we had a threat from outer space, it would unite the whole planet. And I think Kissinger parted it. Ronald Reagan mentioned it over 20 times in different speeches.
You're kidding. I don't recall that.
Yeah.
I used to like Ronald Reagan, too.
Well, that's why he was picked.
I know.
He's a likable role.
Yes, and you know what? He said something one time, and I just knew he was for real because he was talking about the taxes, and he said the government doesn't make money. The government takes money.
Uh-huh.
And I was just in... adored Ronald Reagan. I thought
that's
he was.
That's why he put up the debt at that time to $3 trillion. He was the first one to break the $3 trillion barrier with the Star Wars project.
Well, okay.
So they all say the same thing. It's like Jefferson talking about. These guys were in the Illuminati, like Jefferson, and they can tell the truth, and it's quoted by patriots because they don't realize that Jefferson was speaking as a member of the Illuminati. There's a double meaning to it, depending on where you stand. And Jefferson said, he said, a generation who is born into paying off the debt of a previous generation is therefore a generation of slaves. And therefore, he said, we should abolish the debt with the beginning of each generation. Yeah.
And of course, there was no intention to do it, but because he said it, because he is quoted a lot, often at least, and the statements that he's quoted as saying are right on target.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Except one of the statements that he's famous for, I believe it's Thomas Jefferson, is that every 20 years there should be a revolution, to get the government back in. And actually, this was in a letter, I read it, and it was taken out of context, the statement that he made. But people, who think that, okay, the only way out of this is to you know, pick up the guns and start shooting, which is what I think, I believe deeply that that is what the elite would love,
mm-hmm.
that people would do that. And if that statement was taken totally out of context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, many of them are. Yeah. You have to read their own writings and letters to know what they said, not what someone else says about them.
Yeah.
And Jefferson left plenty to read, you know.
I'd like to flip on us again here.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Francis Bacon earlier.
Yeah.
And it caught me because I had a conversation with a listener today, and we were talking about the Bible itself.
Mm-hmm.
And Francis Bacon, and I wanted to know, I don't know that we've talked about this before, but even in the, what do you call it, that his biographer wrote, that he was the one who had the final editing of the King James Version of the Bible.
Well, he definitely was involved in it. I don't know if he was the one who had the final say. I mean, there was a huge team working on that, you know.
Yeah.
And he did make some famous statements concerning the future and the English language, because that Bible was written partly to update or create, actually, the basis for English to be the universal language of the future. That's what he said.
English is the universal language of the future?
It would be, yeah, it was to be made the universal language of the future.
Well, how come they're pushing Spanish on us so heavily? Heavily?
That's just for the States.
I see.
See, most of the white people in the States, according to Jack Satali, will be the next boat people looking for work abroad.
That's what he said, isn't it?
That's the millennium is the name of his book.
Winners and losers in the New World Order.
Yep.
And he said that the majority of the people will be like boat people wandering the planet looking for work.
That's right, yeah. And he said that Spanish would become the dominant language. I think he wrote that in 1990 or 91.
91, I believe.
And he was François Mitterrand of France, his main advisor. And after that, he went to the United Nations. So he was up there, and he was a member of all the big clubs, you know, Bilderbergers. And
yes, he was the advisor to François Mitterrand for 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you always said that number two is always number one?
That's right. Yeah.
And I could see him whispering in Franz Mitterrand's ear.
Yeah.
Franz Mitterrand, is that Franz?
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see him sitting at these meetings,
mm-hmm.
and leaning over and whispering something to him.
Yeah.
I could just picture it, Alan.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that evidently even in the United States right now, you know, who the real boss is and who's the man who reads the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite evident who's running the show behind the scenes.
The gentleman I was talking to, you know, I say this today, it could have been yesterday.
Uh-huh.
God, Alan, I lose track of time.
Yeah.
But anyway, he asked me what I thought about Revelations.
Mm-hmm.
I said, first of all, I do not understand it. There is a code there. But, you know, if you're the priesthood that's been in charge for 3,000 or 6,000 or longer years,
yeah.
and you're writing the books, or your minions are writing the books, if they know what their plan is for the future, they can write it like a prophecy. And then people say it's going to come true because it was prophesied all those years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's how they did it. And of course, the mystery religion was quite well known for actually writing prophecies to come after the event had actually happened.
Say that again.
Well, what they would say often is that something will happen in, they'd say, the year 2000, just for example. And of course, they'd write it in their year. This would be found in the year 2005, and they would date it the year 1800, so that when it was found, people would say, "My God, these guys prophesied."
Oh, okay.
So they were famous for this, you see.
Okay, changing.
And if you go into Revelations when you look at the last major battle that took place during the rebellion against the Romans, the last major holdout was Masada, a fortress on a hill above Megiddo Plains.
Megiddo, uh-huh.
Now, if you take the Hebrew or Aramaic for mountain, it's Har. And so you have Har Megiddo, Armageddon.
Oh.
That was Armageddon, you see. And of course, they simply they dropped that out the Bible after they put it in about the 5th century. And it was gone for centuries and then popped back in again. And we don't know how much was changed or updated for to be used all over again, you know.
Yeah.
And so they can keep using the same things over and over and over. But it's complete mystery religion. That's your typical language of the mystery religion. And that's why it doesn't make sense to most people.
I see the power in that, though, because people who believe it,
mm-hmm.
you know, the power of our thoughts, the power of the spoken word, mm-hmm. and when you can collectively get millions and millions of people believing mm-hmm. that this is going to happen because it's in the book mm-hmm. and it's coming to pass now, it's the sign of the times,
mm-hmm.
In a sense, the energy of the thought and the spoken word mm-hmm. helps to bring it into fruition.
Absolutely. You create form and you work towards it. And you accept that which happens that may fall in line with it.
You accept it because it's God's plan.
God's will.
Yeah.
And so God must be the great abuser in the sky who loves you one minute and then thumps you in the head the other, and you praise him because, well, he's God.
Well, don't you know God can do anything he wants?
Well, that's just...
And if he wants to thump you in the head, by God, he can.
It's Yahweh or the highway.
Yeah. Yahweh.
Yeah, I'm fed up hearing this Yahweh stuff.
You know that children have, when you talk, you'll say something, they'll go, no way.
Yeah.
And I find myself going, Yahweh, and then I'm going, oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm surprised they haven't picked up that up as a slogan.
Yahweh, yeah. We're out of time here,
yeah.
And I want to thank you again for being with us.
Awesome.
And let our listeners know, folks, Alan will be back with us next Wednesday. Tomorrow night, Darren Wheat is going to be with us, and I know that you will appreciate hearing Darren, too. Alan, thank you so much, my dear. And folks, thank you. Remember that Sweet Liberty is brought to you by you, and it will keep coming to you as long as you want it to. You have to take part. We'll see you back tomorrow night. Have a lovely evening, sweet dreams, and God bless you. Good night. Good night, Alan.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are...